All right, welcome to the first podcast of the 2014 fantasy football season. We thought we'd get together tonight. I'm here joined with Ryan Gilmer and Andrew Hun.
You're joined with us, yeah. Or you're joined by
in holy matrimony.
Did I say by?
He said with.
I'm joined with. We're joined together. We thought we'd get together tonight and just kind of preview the fantasy football season. Hopefully set a precedent of other people doing some podcasts this year. We're currently at my house, John's house, in the garage, drinking some 16-ounce pounders of Oberon, Bell's Oberon. Ryan's enjoying a Sam Adams Summer Ale, and Andy's enjoying some sort of pale ale. And we're smoking some Cuban cigars. Andy, you want to talk about those Cuban cigars?
There's some cigars that I brought for the birth of John's new child. Mm. I thought that I would waste one on him. So we're...
You're okay.
Smoking out in the garage.
Yeah, you may hear some crickets chirping, some rain and thunder. We're out in the garage with the door open. So, I don't know what we want to talk about right off the bat. We're adding some new members to the league this year. Brian Gribben and Ben McConaughey. There was talk we might go down to a 12-team league, and we decided to keep it at 14 for some reason. I don't know why.
I wonder who made that decision.
Who made that decision? Me? Brian?
That's probably our...
Were you in favor of a 14
dictatorial
team?
I'm very in favor of a 14-team league. Out. And we'll talk about... I think Brian needs to be more of a dictator. I don't think he's enough of a dictator right now.
He's a huge dictator.
He's a no, I think Gribben is just coming back to the league.
He is.
Gribben was in the league during its rocky but formational startup years under Josh Coffey. Yeah. I might have to recheck the transcripts to see what role, if any, Gribben played in Coffey quitting the league. I think he did play a substantial
really?
Role. Oh, everybody did. It was mostly Joel and Brian. And then when I joined in, that was when Coffey was like...
I think I've read this before. Like, Joel got kicked.
The message boards.
He got banned from the message
boards.
Brian let him use his username to get in.
And Coffey was pissed because he got circumvented.
Yeah.
Then, so he banned Brian.
Yeah.
Then I let Brian...
yeah.
And I was like, I know I'm getting banned. Do it, Coffey.
Yeah, yeah.
Do it.
I'm laying down
and then Coffey was like... Had to go to the... He had to hit the... He had to press the nuclear codes. And he, like, immediately, like, destroyed the league.
Yeah.
And then benched his starters. Like, did all the trashy...
So that's where Joel learned that
trick. That's where he learned that trick. His coffee. Did all that. But somehow, through it all, McGinnis managed to get the, like...
How did we transition from coffee to McGinnis?
At some point, coffee eased up enough to give McGinnis the commish, like... info
so
and
Coffey appointed
stuff.
McGinnis. He wasn't elected,
which is kind of funny if you think about it.
A jury of his peers, he was appointed.
He was chosen.
It was more divine right than
in Igloo Intramural Sports will forever be changed.
Of all of Coffey's, like, Coffey had so many enemies and no friends, and yet he gave it to McGinnis. I don't know how Brian pulled that off. But, I mean, that was another, good fortune for the league, because I think McGinnis is probably the only commissioner that could have kept the league together this long.
Yeah.
Everyone else would.
Yeah, he's just political enough to be able to play all sides.
Right.
Yeah, except he did steer the league through the past few... How many years has the league been?
Like 12 years, dude. Like 2003 was like...
Yeah, but how many years has the league kind of been messed up a little bit with keepers and...
Last three, four years.
So Gribb's back.
I expect big things.
I'm glad.
Gribb's good for the league. He knows how to play. He keeps his head down. He does his research. He's never going to get caught out with some dude on a bye in his starting lineup. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I wonder if he's going to draft Brent Celek this year.
He does love a good meaty tight end.
And then...
We have Ben.
Who, I must say, already is showing more pure gumption
initiative
than even Eric Marshall.
Yeah.
Trying to fish for, you know, fish yeah. for
he's testing research, his limits. Research. He's like a 2-year-old testing his
he
limits.
He is, but the thing I like is that he comes right out and he says, "If I beat you, you're suck.
Really bad.
You suck." Which I can appreciate.
I'm glad Ben's
He's setting the bar low. I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
I have no idea if Ben's any good at fantasy or not. But we'll find out.
He could be the Uncle Phil of fantasy football.
He could be a total ringer.
And hustle us.
And hustle everybody. But he needs to be in the league. He's reached...
Yes.
This is not just about football. It's about his status.
Yeah. And that's what he's been
recognized.
Yeah.
He's been recognized. And that's the most important thing, I think.
It is interesting how, on one level, we want the league to actually be competitive and to have the best managers we can. But on another level... It is kind of like a microcosm of everybody's relationships in the igloo.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Which is why, when fall came around, Mr. Joel Weidenhammer realized he had to get back in the league.
Oh, shit.
Right. He's like, oh, God, I can't let... If I'm out of the league, I'm nothing.
Yeah.
Without the league.
Without the league, I'm nothing.
I'm nothing.
So he's back in the
Without
league.
Without me, the league is nothing.
He's probably going to quit after he heard you say that. He's probably typing up an email right now.
Joel knows what I mean, though. I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I just mean that, like, oh, dude, like, this is freaking fun, and I gotta get back in on it. And if I don't get back in on it, then it's gonna suck.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to this season.
Should be good. I think it's good that we're clearing the slates a little bit. We're getting rid of the keepers.
Right. We've hit reset.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you try and tinker with something too much to try and make it better, and in the process...
Well, people weren't happy, you know, and that's you know,
you pay when
you're not happy with who you're with. You find
grass is greener.
Grass is greener.
As Counting Crows once say, "You paid paradise and put up a problem."
That's the worst Counting Crows reference. I was like, "All right, here comes the Nick like Counting Crows." Yeah, like yeah. We're throwing
Nick's
out like, a Counting Crows reference.
Like,
Nick.
Volleyball,
Nick's
volleyball,
like,
volleyball,
"All right,
volleyball.
All right, oh, you picked that. Oh, terrible song.
That's funny."
Yeah. So, let's talk about a little bit. Let's talk about the resetting keepers. Who's the number one pick based on the fact that you know you've got the guy for 3 years, right? If you...
We're continuing. So, like, whatever you draft now, we are still having keepers, but we're...
Keepers are in effect after this year. Yeah, so, if you draft... If you get the first overall pick, you can draft whoever you want to keep for 3 years.
Just to be clear, though, we're resetting keepers because we reset draft pick trading? Or what's the rationale behind that? Do you know?
Right. No, we didn't have draft pick trading last year, correct?
Right.
Because
we wanted to get away
from it. I had more picks. Like we were basically letting
you
the effects of all the super team stuff fade out.
Yeah.
Because if I could keep who I got, I had like 5 picks in the first 3 rounds.
Right.
Or 6 picks in the first 3 rounds. So if I got to... It's not fair to... That I have more access to those guys, but somehow it's fair that we have a random draft order, and whoever gets the first order gets to, you know, somehow that's fair. But whatever,
yeah.
I'll step off that soapbox. But I had more picks, that makes sense at least. So I wasn't allowed to keep that. We didn't want to keep those guys. Now that everybody's going to have equal number of draft picks, keepers are back in. Does that make sense?
I mean, to a certain degree, but it does kind of. I mean, honestly, I wasn't ever going to be that big of a beneficiary of keeping the guys that I had tagged, because a lot of the guys that I had tagged, like Arian Foster, for example, I'm not sure that I would waste a first or second round pick on him this year.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I mean, like, Peyton Manning finished top player last year, you know, threw for like 5,500 yards and 50 touchdowns. But would he still be a top 5 pick this year if you knew that, like, maybe in 3 years he would be done?
Well, that's where the keepers really bring a new
element. Or would you rather draft somebody like maybe even Aaron Rodgers or like a Jamal Charles who would be good for another 3 years?
If you think keepers that a lot of people are going to keep, then that's going to diminish Manning's value. But if you think, well, who's good this year may not be good in next year or in 2 years, you just keep drafting for the current year and say, well, if I run into a keeper, fine, but I'm not going to draft a guy. I'm not going to change people's value based on that. I think Manning's a top five pick. I'd pick.
I think that's something that people should think about when they draft. But honestly, I think a lot of the people in our league are probably just going to draft and draft how they normally draft, and at the end of the season, then address the issue of keeping.
Somebody, well, but you're still going to have to give up, you know, a first round pick for a keeper. Yeah. So if you draft a guy like Andrew Luck that might have high keeper value, may still not be enough to sacrifice your fourth overall pick next year, whatever you may get. Yeah. So you just have to see what you get next year. See which ping pong ball Reagan pulls out of the Pinto.
Let's hope she didn't get passed on by Tessa for bad luck. The Hulu bad luck.
John,
how are we doing with the...
I don't think you'll get the 14th pick, man.
How are we doing with noise volume with the rain? All right.
I think we're all right.
Hopefully everyone can still hear us. We'll just talk a little bit louder. So, Ryan, let me ask you this. This is probably not the right time to be asking you this.
Absolutely is the right time to
ask you this. Have you thought about approaching each manager individually and doing a side league with an auction draft?
I don't think there'd be a lot of interest, but I have discussed the idea or thought about doing an auction league at some point, but... Yeah. I mean, I don't care to do more than one league. The bottom line is, I've cut leagues. Like, I used to be in leagues, whatever. Yeah. Work league, whatever league.
You used to this be the league. Eric Marshall.
I don't want to have to root for literally every guy in the league. Like, at some point, you just dilute yourself too far. So, this is my only league. I do it. If I don't agree with all the stuff, fine. But this is the only league I want to do.
Period. I mean, I'm usually in, like, three leagues every year. Obviously, I'm in this one, and then I'm in... a league with some friends from like high school and stuff, and then a league that Andy Ziegler puts together with like Pete and some other people. But it kind of sucks because you end up drafting different players, and you end up confusing yourself over who's on, like what players you have on what team and what week they have buys and all this kind of shit. And it's just extra.
What's the scoring? You know, what's differences? The scoring?
What are the rosters? How many players do I have to start each week? Can I start more than one tight end? All this kind of stuff, and it's really stupid. I wish that there was a way for me to gracefully bow out of doing the extracurricular stuff.
You should probably talk about it.
Ryan's trying to.
I'm having cigar issues.
Touch up the cigar. You should be all right.
Rotate that shit, man.
No, you're good. You're golden. It'll catch up.
Whatever. The people don't care about my cigar issues. The people care about previewing fantasy season.
All right, so let's move this along. I didn't get Eric Marshall's three keys to a successful fantasy football podcast outline in front of me, so...
Number one is go for 2 hours and 25 minutes, no less.
Make sure you talk about 12 different things.
Make sure you preview each matchup in gory detail.
So we talked about the ending of the draft pick trading and adding two more guys. The one other thing I think we should talk about a little bit is the bench flex.
Yeah, that's about that.
Situation that we were talking about.
What are your guys' thoughts on that? So the current starting lineups and bench, what are your thoughts on that? Adding, subtracting, keeping the same.
Well, this is probably like not really relevant information, but I was talking to Andy earlier tonight. I think Brian McGinnis made a comment that adding another starting roster spot to your team basically rewards people who have bad drafts. I think is what he said on GroupMe.
I think that's a verbatim quote.
Yeah. And I think the fact that
I don't quite understand that.
I'm not saying this because I haven't been doing very good in fantasy. I have had a lot of bad luck, but I think a lot of fantasy football is luck, and people put a little bit too much. Because of the fact that you have 14 teams in a league, at the end of the draft, pretty much most teams are pretty much very equal. The difference between a really good draft and a really poor draft when you have 14 teams in your league is very small.
Yeah, but
so adding a roster spot to reward people who have a bad draft, I don't think... I mean, our league doesn't ever have like a really, really horrible team.
and a really, really stacked team.
Well, but you just you don't know what the stacked teams are until the fourth week of the season.
Right, whoever breaks out and whatever. Yeah.
I mean, actually, I think that the metaphor of fantasy being pretty close to poker actually holds a lot of weight, because good poker players are good, and they put themselves in positions to win. It's very much a luck-based game, but you have to be good in order to win consistently, right. And I think the same is true about fantasy football. Yes, you have, like, bizarre injuries, or, I mean, you have the year that I drafted Peyton Manning, he got his neck injury,
right. And he just
suddenly
never made it
my
bad.
Team went like from being super awesome to super shit.
Yeah.
I lost Reggie Wayne last year for the whole season. I stashed Percy Harvin.
You had a ton of injuries.
Yeah, you
last
really
year.
Sucked as a manager.
Yeah, I really did. But see, that's my point, is that coming out of the draft, I was pretty satisfied with how I drafted. I drafted a lot of guys I thought with a lot of upside, and I thought like I had a pretty above average team. It just didn't work out that way. But that's kind of how you have to view fantasy. You have it, and it's kind of stupid because no one ever plays fantasy football for 20 years. But I think that's kind of like, if you're playing one league once a year,
right?
You have to look at it over like a 5 or a 10 year span in order for some of those averages to weigh themselves out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Eventually, the good managers will win more often.
Right.
Just in virtue of them being better at the game, but it is highly dependent on the luck of.
Well, guys get hurt. If you're like, if your guy gets hurt, like Jamal Charles shatters his leg week one, like, okay, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
You know, you're
in
deep. The thing I like about adding spots is that it means you have to have a deeper roster. You can't just top heavy. You can't ride your quarterback that's gonna go off for 30 every week. You know, it helps people who don't get the luck of the hot first five picks.
Yeah.
To find guys in later rounds that have to start and actually contribute, as opposed to, I got Manning and he's going to throw for 6 touchdowns against the Colts.
Well, and to be honest, I would think that if we do add a flex spot and eliminate a bench spot, it actually makes the later rounds more important.
Yep.
It adds more.
I agree.
It makes the later rounds more important, but it makes the draft order less important.
Yep, which is good. And
which
it makes your
really
start
good.
Sit decision bigger because you're going to have more marginal decisions to make on do I start X or Y,
right?
And that decision, and there's some luck involved with that too. But if you start two guys that are projected to each score 10,
yeah.
You know, one guy scores 30 and the other guy scores 5. But I like all those aspects of it. I don't see I don't see the negatives to it, but it's just preference. I mean, people have different preferences for whatever, and that's fine, but I actually do like adding a spot. It makes it more guys to follow, more games matter. Like, what makes fantasy fun is that it makes, like, anytime there's a random NFL game on, it becomes interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I have a guy for that Thursday night game or the Monday night game. Like, if you have one more guy starting, it just keeps everybody more involved.
Yeah.
It helps people watch the games.
Can you envision a scenario where, well, not envision, but there's got to be a scenario. There's going to be a scenario where right now, before we add a roster spot and drop a bench spot, we have, what, 5 bench spots?
Something
We have 5 spots. Yeah, 5 bench.
So we go down to 4 bench spots.
In three flex.
8 starting.
Yeah,
spots.
9.
9 starting spots.
Yep.
So you do that. There's going to be a scenario where someone's going to have to drop a decent player for, because they don't have enough bench spots, or teams are going to have to start drafting defenses because you can't start picking up defenses a week early to hold a draft, you know, roster spot or a bench spot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that might make more players available on the market.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what everyone else thinks. The problem is we don't know what the other 13 people besides Brian think, you know. I guess we know what I think, but I don't know what the other 10 people think, or if they just don't care, you know.
Yeah.
If they don't care, then whatever. But. Well, I mean, all that stuff will probably just eventually, I would assume it will end up keeping things the way they are, but if you had to choose, would you be in favor of keeping the current setup, or would you be in favor of adding a ninth starting spot, a third flex? Because I don't know where you two stand on it.
I'm more in favor of anything that adds more weight to the week-to-week decisions rather than luck. And to me, like, and this probably stems from me getting the shaft on draft orders, but to me, draft order, like you were talking about, draft order is random luck. And the people who draft the top five guys, the top five people in the draft in order, have a significant advantage over the last five people in the draft order. So adding a starting spot, or, yeah, you know.
Helps offset that.
Yeah.
And Brian, we looked at your spreadsheet, dude. We know you can overcome it if you don't get a top pick. You can still compete. It's not like it kills you, but it is a disadvantage you have to overcome.
Did Brian make that spreadsheet?
Yeah, he went back and looked at
he averaged all those out and ranked everybody?
Yeah, and averaged it out. It's Excel, dude. That's equal sign. Equal sign.
Some quick
A1 plus A10. Enter. Divided by 10.
Yeah, he's a middle manager, John. He probably does that shit all
the time. That dude, yeah, he probably knows.
He knows Excel like
every Excel like the back of his
head of his penis.
Right.
Okay.
Right. What do you think, Andy? Would you do another starting spot, or would you go with what we got, or would you try to get rid of starting spots?
I think that where I stand on the whole issue is I think that it sounds like a decent idea, and I think that. I think that it has a lot of pluses. Obviously, I read the article that Brian linked to about the flex spots and all this kind of stuff. I just think that at this point, I'm coming down on the side that maybe we don't do it this year. I'd really like to take just a season and, like, stabilize the amount of people we have playing.
Right.
And
consolidate.
Yeah.
Consolidate our games.
I mean, I'm not even sure I'm not even sure that retaining keepers going forward after the season is a good idea. I don't know. And so that's kind of what I hope from this season is that we can get everybody involved and that people will actually start voicing their opinions more consistently.
Yeah.
And so that way, regardless of what we do next year or the year after, we have some kind of a consensus. Because I think that's what happened with draft pick trading.
Yeah,
with
a consensus developers. Yep.
Is that there was a vocal minority consensus before, which is fine, but it really didn't.
Right.
Everybody wasn't behind that
idea. And that stuff has to work. The other thing is we've got to make decisions on this stuff in January and not. Because I don't remember what it was. You know, you don't remember stuff like. You kind of remember how things played out, or what you liked, what you didn't like, but
it should be at the trophy presentation party.
Right, like get this stuff. Say this is what worked. This is what didn't.
Debrief
at the end. Yeah,
we should buy Brian a gavel, and he should be like one of those
curly wigs.
One of the white curly wigs. Like a barrister in London.
Yeah,
yeah, and he should call the meeting to order, and
the representatives from Staines.
Stains. Oh god. So this is where we talk about the Premier League, right?
I think it is pretty interesting that you mentioned you'd rather have people who are vocal. I think if we were to stabilize the league for a couple of years and move into having managers who are quote unquote involved, and right now really involved means updating your roster.
Giving your roster.
We're going to move to the point where we need managers to weigh in on situations.
To have an
things
opinion
like
about
this.
Things,
because
yeah.
The majority of our league doesn't really say anything until something happens that they don't like. You know?
I think that it's not that people... It's not that anyone is uninformed or doesn't have an opinion. I think it's just that... We're not very good at
communicating.
Well, it's not just that. I think that in general, the people that really care about the rule set and really care about gaining an edge are the ones that have an opinion about the rule set.
Right.
Yeah.
And the people that don't care about the rule set, that are just worried about having fun and winning games, and don't really care about playing every angle don't have an opinion. So I guess I just wish that we could get to a point where things are settled enough, where people are comfortable, and then hopefully the level of involvement will go up. You know what I mean? Because the draft pick trading and the keeper situation really did decrease involvement in the league. Like, I think that a lot of people got, you know...
Right, which is why it's now...
upset about it and stuff.
Gone. Changed. Well, to all those who may be listening to this, please give your input quickly. And I guess we'll... I mean, we'll have to come up with some type of decision, probably by the lottery or whatever. I mean, we still have 2 weeks, I mean, until we even... We're not going to draft for till Labor Day, which is another 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So there's plenty of time for people to put in their 2 cents. And I mean, I think there are people... I think we want to hear it, so...
All right, let's do a little Coors Light cold hard facts here.
God, John. Let's talk about draft preparation, because this came up.
Hold on. I want to see a quick survey, preseason survey, for the draft. All right, I need an answer from both of you.
Okay.
First manager to draft a defense. Go.
Oh God.
Aaron.
I'm gonna go with Eric Marshall because he'll think that he's getting an edge on someone.
Yeah.
Well, there are a couple good defenses that are.
This is exactly
better.
My point. He's gonna be like, "It's a tier one defense, guys.
It's a good tier one, good defense." Who argues that? Is that Eric?
I don't know.
Is he just tier? Is he a tier?
It sounds like something. That
somebody
even,
argues that
a
good defense is like a good. It's like a skill position.
Yeah, a skill position. Yeah.
All right, first person to draft a kicker.
Phil Dawson's not in the league anymore.
Right?
Phil, no.
Yeah, he is. He kicks for the Niners, doesn't he?
Oh, does he?
I think he does.
Oh, really?
He kicked for him
last
year.
He did last year. I don't know. This, again, this is just showing how much I know. But
Kickers, I think, this is the weird thing. I think that it's way more probable that a defense gets picked inside the first 10 rounds than a kicker.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because Seattle's
people
really
don't
good.
Give a crap about kickers anymore.
Well, here's the other thing, is that if we add a starting spot and drop a bench spot, like I said earlier, people might not be able to play roulette with defenses every week.
Yeah,
you know, you might have to draft a defense.
And the other thing is people can't stash two defenses. Like
yeah,
a lot of people,
or two
you know,
quarterbacks or two tight ends or whatever. Yeah.
You got to freaking come out and play. You can't go play. What's the game where you go hide and then you... And then
hide
the,
and seek?
No, but it's hide and seek, but when
kick
someone finds you, they hide with you.
Oh, sardines.
Yeah, you can't play sardines.
Nathan, your first brother church
you
used.
You gotta get rid of your second defense because you need that spot to start another flex. You can't stash two kickers or whatever.
First manager to draft a Browns player.
Steph. Johnny Manziel.
Steph?
Ninth round. I don't know. I just kind of said that. I don't know.
Who's
the most likely Browns player to get drafted?
Josh Gordon.
Well,
he's out,
depending
man.
If he's
who knows
sits for 8 weeks.
If he gets off, that's going to be its own party. He'll be drafted in the top five if he go, like someone's going
to. I guess we'll probably have
some sort of
resolution to that saga before we draft,
right?
I'd say either Aaron or Eric.
Yeah,
Jordan Cameron.
Let's talk about all the draftable Browns
Cameron's
players.
Injured, right?
Ben Tate is draftable.
Cameron's
draftable.
Ben Tate's probably like what a third round pick. Fourth round pick?
Miles Austin.
He's that good. He's going to split carries, I think, with that rookie.
Miles Austin, is he draftable?
Miles Austin, he's like maybe a flyer at the end of the very end. He could be, if Gordon's suspended for 8 games, let's say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah.
Who are their receivers?
Right.
Hawkins and
Miles Austin is their wide receiver one now. And he's going to, I mean, he's had years in the past where he's had good, I mean,
didn't
he's
you roster Miles Austin when he.
Probably, he's been hurt. I mean, he's worth it. He's worth rostering. It's better than Hakeem Nicks, who, by the way, I found out today Hakeem Nicks plays for the Colts, which is like...
He got hits, in the offseason.
Hits my every bullseye I've got. Hakeem Nicks,
true. Colts. Yeah, because if he plays for the Colts, he's a high quality...
He's a corn character.
He's a corn-fed... That's racist.
No, that's Joel right there. Corn-fed.
Draft prep.
Yeah, draft prep. Let's talk about your draft prep. Because I'm saying,
"Were you serious?"
I was totally serious. Oh, totally serious.
Fantasy magazine?
No, 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 not the mags, dude. That's a the mag joke. God. That's just a joke,
dude. That's a mag.
I want to know what you do for
buy the fantasy cup, mags at the Speedway on the way to the draft.
Yeah, he only bought one, first of all, and it was outdated by a month.
It's
and a
like
half.
For August,
and he. I don't even think he looked at it.
Yeah, he's like turns to the rankings.
That comes back from like I bet Maddie bought like. Card, you know, Beckett's, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
like,
yeah dude, yeah. We had Beckett's as kids.
Like, you're like, what's my Mike Piazza rookie card worth?
Yeah.
What's my Big Hurt rookie card?
My upper deck.
Yeah. My top flare.
Flare.
Whatever. So, draft prep. John, talk about your draft prep.
I try and listen to a couple of podcasts. I look at the rankings.
Fantasy Focus?
No. I look at the ranking, you know, several ranking sites. I try to do some mock drafts, but honestly, like, even in PPR mock drafts, the order in which players go in those mock drafts is totally different from the order in which they go in our drafts.
Right. I agree.
So, you know, it's kind of one of those things that, like, spots where players should be going are not spots that they're going in our draft. So it's tough to prep for our draft without knowing. It'd probably be a little bit more helpful to look at previous drafts from our league.
That would be helpful, I think.
Instead of mock drafting.
People have an affinity for certain types of players they've had in the past.
But really, I'll download a ranking from a website that I trust and make amendments to it however I see fit. And that's usually what I enter the league with. And draft on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's basically my strategy. I go out and I try and find the most, you know, comprehensive ranking that I...
It's applicable.
Yeah. And then I tweak it depending on, obviously, who gets drafted and whatnot and what my own predisposition is. But it's not like... I feel like if you do any one thing, like if you... If you just look at the players, for example, that scored the most points last year,
right.
That's not a very good thing to go off of, because then you'll never have an updated, like, yeah, you'll think that Chris Johnson is still playing for the Titans and stuff.
Yeah, or that Mike Vick is still quarterbacking for the Eagles.
It's true.
Who would think that?
I don't know.
Dipshits.
What do you do, Ryan?
Well, I have a couple. I have maybe like a three-pronged system.
three-pronged attack.
I want to know PPR scoring. So, I posted this on Groomy. I go, just do ESPN top. Like, look at their PPR draft sheet that gives the top 100 listings at each position. I think about what positions am I targeting. The other thing is it's really hard to do that because you want to know your draft position before you know what's going to be there when I draft 12th or 2nd. So I'm looking at, well, if I get the first quarterback versus the 14th quarterback, how much do I care versus the first running back versus the 20th running back or whatever, looking at marginal like value between those guys, thinking about what teams might be better this year. The better your team is, the more likely that your fantasy guy gets a piece of that if a team goes from being 8-8 to being 11-5. So I look at that maybe a little bit. But, and PPR value, too. I mean, you want to know, basically, you want running backs to get check downs, you want...
That's the thing that kind of sucks about listening to podcasts or anything.
Is none of it's PPR.
Yeah, almost none of it is PPR.
It's like 10-team standard scoring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is totally not applicable at all.
Because 10 teams is like easy mode.
Like,
literally like everybody
all-star,
has
all-star teams. You listen to those podcasts and they say he's the 40th running back, so you're dividing 40 by 14 instead of 10.
Yeah.
You know, he's not your fourth running back, he's your fifth or sixth or whatever. So,
but I don't think there's really a whole lot. I think you just kind of have to know, here's the order of the guys I like, and you kind of play it by ear as the draft goes through, and you say, you know, where are you in the snake? Okay, there's 15 picks. Here's the five guys I'm targeting next time it comes around, and who's there, and who do
now,
I hope is there.
How much stock do you... This is something I want to talk about. How much stock do you put in this bullshit Brian comment about how he goes and mocks, but he controls the whole mock based on how he thinks everybody else is going to draft? So he drafts in position, but then he actually does everybody else's picks.
Yeah.
That, I think, is a little...
I think it's mind games. I think Brian's a good manager. Everyone knows that. He's going to be good this year. But I think a lot of stuff, do you think that's a valid
way to prepare for the draft?
No. A lot of stuff, he thinks it has value. He thinks it has value to him, so more power to him. But I don't think it really helps him in the long run. He's good because he's knowledgeable and a good manager, not because his draft prep is superior. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, he's smart. He knows football. He knows the scoring. He knows that... who's going to probably do what.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not because he mocks 58 mocks or he goes to some site where he can magically figure out what we're all going to do. Like, that's all.
Well, but really, like, draft prep really, like, the difference between really good draft prep and average draft prep is probably, like, 2 or 3 players.
Right, and it's late round picks.
You know, that will pan out
it's
for
less
you.
Obvious stuff.
And that goes back to, like, the 14-team thing.
And that's what he's done really well over the few years is picking out the guys. He targets guys in, like, the 6th, 7th round where he picks a guy and he's like, oh, that guy ends up being, like, tight ends. He's always able to get tight ends late that produce for him better. Yeah. You know, he got the Gronk. The year Gronk, like, busted it, first became, like, a household name.
Yeah,
he
had him
busted a nut. Well, he was, like, a 10th round pick that year. That's the stuff that's really made him really, I think, successful. But I think, I mean, if he can, the tough part for him is that he has to continue to replicate that every year. You know, like this year, Percy Harvin, he's healthy. Everybody knows he's a PPR machine. Sproles, we could talk a little bit about Sproles, but that cat's out of the bag. You know, like, he's got to continue to unearth these guys before the league wises up to it. And I don't know, maybe he'll be able to continue to do that every year. But that's tough to actually continually be ahead of the curve on who's going to be good this year, who the new guy is that's going to come out.
See, and I think the thing that I think is really weird about drafting in particular is that you have guys, you know, as I was thinking about it, I was thinking about like someone like Brandon Pettigrew, right? Like, he's in a high volume passing attack.
Right. Julius Thomas was the pick last year. The dude has never done anything for anybody,
but this year. I mean, he could catch 100 passes.
Yeah.
No one knows. And those are the kind of guys that I think that you really have to try and zero in on.
Yeah.
The guys that are easily overlooked.
After the fact, it looks incredibly obvious, too. Well, like, the Julius Thomas thing was like, oh, man, Manning just throws it every... Like, he's going to score a ton of points.
Yeah.
His tight end's going to just get blown up, like... Who's the new Dallas Clark, right, in Denver?
Yeah,
and then
but
you look
it wasn't
back
that
like,
obvious,
oh.
though, because a lot of people didn't think that Manning wasn't going to be as prolific last year as he was.
Right. That was a little bit of a surprise, but it made sense. Like, you've got an offense that's just going to go nuts. Like, that's the other thing about what I was talking about, draft prep. You identify teams that are just going to have – they're just going to have hot, incredibly good offenses, and you just try to get pieces of it. Patriots with Brady, Saints with Breeze. Man, you find a really good quarterback, and then you – latch onto a guy who's not a household name that's going to benefit from their little spraying passes around and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, who's this year's guy, you know, for that? I don't know if they're... it's just hard because every year somebody... And then the next year you can't do that pick again because everyone knows, oh, Julius Thomas is now going to get drafted in the
fourth round.
Yeah,
but people still sleep on stuff. I mean, last year, Brian got Darren Sproles, like, literally 2 or 3 picks before I was going to take him.
Right.
And I'm like, God damn it. Like,
I
always sleep on that dude. And it wasn't like I was really sleeping on because I was planning on taking him. But at the same time, it seems like there's always these guys, you know, like the Wes Welkers.
Sure.
You know, like these high volume guys, especially PPR players.
Yeah.
Are the ones that somehow always get slept on because they're just not... You don't equate them as being in the same league as other players.
Right, and if you can get a guy in the 4th round who's your second wide receiver, who really is a wide receiver one, that's the other thing he's done a good job of, is he's managed to snag guys a couple picks before. Like,
right.
He tries to identify exactly, like, where's the latest I can take this guy and still get him.
Yeah.
And that's... If you're good at that, if that's a repeatable skill, more power to you. You know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes a big difference, because that's... That's what you really need are the guys every week that are going to put up 16, 18 points just because they get 7 receptions every week. It doesn't matter if they score touchdowns or not, you know? So.
Yeah, fantasy becomes a lot less stressful when you can just plug those guys in week to week.
Right, but if you get that guy later, 4th, 5th round, you know, the Antonio Browns, That was, I think, Dave, last year. I don't know who had. Did Dave have Antonio Brown last year?
It sounds like a Dave.
I had him the first year. I think I picked him up off waivers or something. The first year he was like,
yeah,
you know, a dude. And then I was going to take him again the next year, and Dave took him, I think, two picks ahead of where I did. And I was like, it was like a fifth round or something. Yeah. He ends up leading the receivers in fantasy points. Yeah. You know, it's like, that's the stuff that'll win you the league, which Dave did, right?
Yeah.
I still think that there's a pretty large margin of error in drafting, you know? I mean,
yeah.
Scarcity comes into play. Like, the year that everybody drafted tight ends before me, I actually wanted to make it a tight end draft by going really early on a tight end, mm-hmm. because tight ends are one of those positions where there is a real separation from the high volume guys to like the rest of the league.
Yeah.
And then I think because we have so many flex spots now, that's a non-issue. Because you can always start a running back or a wide receiver in that slot.
You don't need two tight ends.
Yeah, you don't need Gronk and Jimmy Graham or some stupid thing and then torpedo your running backs and wide receivers for that. But at the same time, I think that there are... for example, quarterbacks. Quarterbacks score a lot of points. So conventional wisdom is you draft quarterbacks early because they're your highest scoring player. But at the same time... coming across high scoring running backs,
right,
is less of a thing. Like LeSean McCoy, for example, is gonna score a shit ton more points
than the 14th
comparatively. Yes, exactly. And that's where I think you can make up a lot of ground in drafting.
Yeah,
is by prioritizing. And you talked earlier about tiers, but I think there is kind of a tiered system because you have to figure out, like, these are the quarterbacks I'm willing to kind of reach for.
Right.
And these are the ones, like, last year, I waited until the, like, eighth round or something to pick up Romo. And although that didn't really work out so well for me last year,
it was still good value.
It was a good value.
Right.
And I think that that's kind of how you have to approach it, is that if the guys you want are off the board, it's better
to go elsewhere.
Yes.
And get the best running back or receiver instead of saying, oh, God, I'm going to draft Eli Manning now because I need a quarterback. Well, you're already screwed. You already missed the train.
Eli two more rounds.
Right, you missed the train. Figure out what you're going to do later on. Yes. Get somebody else later, and then get a good player now.
And that's not immediately obvious.
It's not. But I think that's becoming more. It's becoming more obvious. I think hopefully to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You guys talked about Sproles. About I was like thinking. I don't know. I was, when you said Sproles was like, you're more positive on him that.
Oh, I'm not necessarily.
Right. I thought, like, how's he going to get as many points when he's splitting with LeSean McCoy versus, like, Pierre Thomas?
Like, no, I don't think
he's going to be getting as many points.
No,
as he's
accustomed to. I'm not up on him at all. I just think that. I'm not up on him, but here's a situational thing, for example. McCoy's been injured in the past.
Right.
So
that's a scenario.
That's a high upside kind of pick, right?
Right. You can envision
a
scenario where
he
becomes...
So maybe you would reach for him around earlier than you should, just because there is a scenario where
he goes,
for like 6
he becomes
weeks.
A running back one, right? For a period of time. Yeah.
Especially because he's the kind of talent that in Philly, they're going to have to run some like two-back sets, and they're going to give him the ball.
Yeah. There is, too, because in Philly they don't have DeSean Jackson this year to spread defenses, so...
Right.
They lose him, which will downgrade LeSean McCoy a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
And Jackson goes from catching balls from Nick Foles to catching balls from RG3.
So good. Although Nick Foles hasn't looked hot in preseason so far.
Yeah, I think that there. I mean,
how much stock do you put in preseason games? How many do you watch, and what stock?
Dude, preseason. I don't know if I should take preseason NFL as lightly as I do like preseason EPL. This is like not a lot of people will get this conversation, but like, you know what I mean? Like, if Nick Foles looks like crap in preseason, is he going to look like crap in the season, or do you just say, oh, it's preseason? He's still working kinks out. Or,
I think for, you know, for QB1s in preseason, you can make some definitive or semi-definitive analysis. Because most often guys like Foles are going to see the field first, and they're going to be playing the first team defense from the opposing team. And so at least for the first drive, they're going to be playing in actual game scenarios. Like, maybe they're not playing with the full playbook. Maybe they're working on a specific scheme or whatever. But at least they're playing the number one defense, and it's not like a Johnny Manziel situation where he's playing, like, what, the third team defense of a bunch of guys that may actually end up getting cut.
They get cut, yeah.
So I think that you can draw more conclusions from a QB1 playing or RB1 playing. It's really the guy. It's really like the rookies and value picks like eighth round and up picks. I think is what's really dangerous when you try and infer too many things.
I think it's good for guys that are on the fringe that you try to identify their upside. There was a year Arian Foster, one of the years he like busted out. He tore up preseason and was like, "Who the hell's this guy?"
He killed preseason,
right? And you're like, oh, this guy might be good. Or like Russell Wilson, I think, did the same thing. His rookie
Victor
year.
Victor Cruz did that.
Yeah, and it's like those guys are kind of like, this guy might be good. But for as many guys that are like that, there's guys that have that kill preseason and never do anything. It's kind of a crap. I think you can kind of find both. You could find examples both ways of.
Yeah.
I think it's worth knowing, but
I would
it's
never.
Hard to bank
I
your
would
whole,
never draft. I would never change draft position, really, off of preseason performance, I don't think. Like, preseason performance isn't really going to make me upgrade or downgrade an established player. It may influence who I'm going to take in the 13th round. Maybe I pick a high upside guy that has absolutely been tearing it up in preseason, but it's an unknown. But I don't think it would legitimately change my draft order among established players.
Right, but I think even in our league, we have enough good managers where it's like, if a guy tears up preseason, people are turning on at ESPN and they're like, oh, by the way, this guy's tearing up preseason. Now everyone knows he's tearing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, he, instead of being undrafted, he's going to go in the 9th round because people start to wise up to it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's still, you still have to kind of, it already affects guys' draft position. By the time, because we draft so late, which is really, I like that feature of our league a lot, that we draft so late because you kind of, there's no surprises about injuries and stuff, but.
Except for Peyton's neck injury.
Right, well that was a one-time thing. That was a very weird scenario.
Not that I'm bitter. You're still,
yeah. But people pay attention and they find out, you know, that what's happening in draft guys. I want to know from your perspective, from two non-Brown fan perspectives.
Oh, God.
The Manziel hype kind of hit a new level after the Lions game. Did you see any of his...
I watched him.
Did you see it? And if so, do you think... What is your perspective on that?
Johnny Manziel is kind of weird because when you watch him play, you expect, like... He runs around like a chicken with his head cut off. And, like, you expect him to, like, not be good. You know, not be productive. And he was in college. He did okay, I think, against Detroit. But, like, these reports of him, like, closing ground on Brian Hoyer and stuff. It's like, I didn't see a clear winner between the two of them.
Yeah.
Especially after one game.
One game, you know, then that kind of thing. But... Like, he's just so awkward looking when he plays that it's tough to believe that he'll be good. I'm seriously waiting for him to play, like, a full, like...
A real game.
First team defense.
Yeah.
And also first team defensive players that are, like, looking to, like, put the hurt on
him. Light him up.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I think in the first series that he played with the Browns, like, he did that scramble on a third down scramble.
Yeah.
And I was waiting for him just to get crushed. Not because I want to see him get crushed, but because...
You're wondering if he's... You're skeptical that he's going to be able to do the same stuff.
You go up a tier. And...
The thing is the league is tough enough for players that can do some of that. I mean, Michael Vick is a world-class scrambler. Same thing with Cam Newton. I mean, that guy has wheels.
Ben Roethlisberger.
Well, those guys are a lot bigger than Johnny Manziel.
Yeah,
that's exactly my point. And the league is tough enough for them. I mean, Cam Newton has had, I would say, a hard time adjusting to the speed of the NFL and adjusting to the windows that receivers have. In all of the you know, reading that I've done about the differences between the college and the NFL game, obviously speed is a factor. The windows are a lot tighter. And when you focus so much on your scrambling and that part of your game is so much of what you bring to the table, I just wonder if a quarterback like a Manziel could actually be successful. It's more unlikely that he'll be successful at the next level, just because so much of his game is not focused on hitting guys in stride and all this kind of stuff.
There are several plays that he was scrambling in the preseason game where the commentators were like, if he would have just made this pass here to this open guy, he would have, you know, easy first down, but he chose to scramble and barely get the first down. Things like that, I think, longevity-wise, are going to hurt him.
Right, he's going to have to be, he's definitely going to have to improve on those things over time if he's going to be going to be there. I think, at least from watching, like, I was prepared watching that game to see either Hoyer or Manziel just, like, light it up and to for me to totally discount it and be like, I remember Colt McCoy had a huge, like, his, he had a game against the Packers, his, like, one of the years, and he was, like, 11 for 13 with a touchdown, and, like, you know, like, he just looked, it was, like, 7-on-7 drills, basically. Yeah. Like, he was hitting open guys, and he looked awesome. Whedon did the same thing, like, last year. He had a preseason game where it was like, oh, dude, this guy can really, he's got an arm, he can, but the problem is when a real game comes around, and there's, like, the pocket, the plays that don't go perfect, he can't handle it. And so I was preparing for, like, a game that basically looked like 7-on-7 drills, and they looked great, and I was going to be prepared to, like, shrug it off and be like, whatever. But it wasn't like that. No. They didn't look great.
They were both adequate.
They both showed skills that would be better for them in the long run by being able to, like... Like, I thought Manziel at least kind of knew where his receivers were, knew where his checkdown was. If he was in trouble and knew he couldn't get out, he found the running back. And even if the running back got tackled right away for a one-yard gain, he at least, like... You could see his head moving around the field, like, that guy's covered, that guy's covered, gotta drop it off. Whereas Whedon,
at least
just,
it wasn't tunnel vision.
Whedon's just like a deer in headlights, like, couldn't do anything. Like, I honestly thought, I was more encouraged by the fact they didn't score a touchdown, but I thought the way they played was more encouraging than if they had come out and just put up stats. And
when you say Whedon, are you talking about Hoyer?
No, I'm saying both Hoyer and Manziel, I thought, are going to be noticeable upgrades from Whedon based on how they looked in the preseason game. Yeah. I have no idea if Manziel will be a Pro Bowler at any point in his career or anything like that, but I think if you started him week one, he'll be better than Whedon. And I think Hoyer will be better than Whedon too.
They're both upgrades, but the thing that I think...
And that'll make the Browns a lot better. I mean, Whedon killed them, and so did Campbell. Like, they're so bad.
The thing I think that kind of stinks about what the Browns have done to themselves is that they have two quarterbacks that are very different, that are largely unproven at the pro level, at least.
Right.
I mean, the Hoyer's had a few starts, but I don't think that the Browns are making it very easy on themselves, because I think that there is a lot of internal pressure, from a marketing or from a PR, just the fact that you spent a first-round pick on this guy to get Manziel playing time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost like Manziel is the incumbent to a certain degree.
He gets the benefit of the doubt on everything.
If everything else was equal, Manziel definitely gets the benefit of the doubt.
When he should probably sit.
And I guess that's my problem, is that you want to go... I would think that as a professional team, you want to go into the season saying, this is who we have, and this is what we're going to roll with. I mean, the frickin' Ravens spent how many years with Trent Dilfer at quarterback? And that guy was never in the top 10.
Yeah.
But he was efficient, and he ran the offense, and that's all they needed him to do. And so I think that this kind of... I understand everybody wants to have a good quarterback, and you want your quarterback to be your franchise player and to be the face of the team and all this kind of stuff, but I just...
You shouldn't reach and stretch to force it to happen if it's not quite ready day one.
And the way that... I feel like the way the Browns drafted really put them in kind of a losing position in order to make a decision on that kind of a thing. You know what I mean?
They can't afford to be patient because of the whole
situation.
Well, I think... I don't know.
I mean, best case scenario is that one of those guys absolutely outperforms the other.
It's obvious.
And it's an obvious.
Yeah.
But who knows if that's going to be the case. And what I'm saying is that if it is a close decision, or if the team does struggle and both quarterbacks struggle, then you've got essentially a season of second-guessing yourself as to who you're going to start week to week and, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And that I don't think is very productive. It's kind of like the Nick Foles, Michael Vick thing before Foles really established himself in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what I think is unfortunate about that.
Right. It is kind of a crazy situation, but I just keep telling myself, both these guys are way better than Whedon. Both these guys are way better than Whedon. Whoever plays...
That's very true.
They're going to improve the team and make us better just because they're not shovel passing pick sixes to the other team. And, you know...
We should give a quick shout out to the Browns for trading away T-Rich last season. Holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a very
good trade. Came out ahead in that one.
That turned into the Manziel. Basically, it was a Manziel for T-Rich. Kind of.
Right.
And whatever pick we traded up, we lost. But, yeah.
So are you more excited about fantasy football in the fall? Fantasy football, Browns, OSU/Notre Dame, EPL, or Cavs? Well, the Cavs don't start until like October.
Right. Do you want to answer that first?
I don't think... Do we have to answer this question? I was actually...
I kind of like them all.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I was thinking about this in the car on the way up, and I was like, this is my favorite time of the year.
Right.
Because literally, it's like everything that I like about sports is coming back around.
Right. In like a month, yeah.
Right.
Or two, yeah.
Right.
I mean, this is the thing, is that now I can focus... Like, if my fantasy team ends up blowing, I'll just focus more on Notre Dame football, or I'll focus more on Premier League, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's other stuff that I really enjoy.
You're diversified. You're fully diversified.
Yes. I'm bona fide. I'm diversified.
He's bona fide.
Yeah, I don't think that's an either-or proposition, because everything is starting back up.
Yeah. What do you think, John?
It's an exciting time, man. It's kind of crazy. I'm really excited for fantasy. Fantasy is kind of one of those things that, like, towards the end, of the, it's a drag, man. It's a haul.
Yeah.
Not a drag, it's a haul.
It takes it out of you.
Like, week 10 or week 11, I'm like, God, just get this thing over with.
Once you start to realize, okay, here's the three or four teams that can win it.
Yeah.
If I'm one of those teams, I have a raging hard-on. If I'm not, it's like, well, this sucks.
Yeah. But then, like, March... Or April. I'm like, God, I can't wait till fantasy starts. Starting to listen to that when the draft rolls around, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Ready for fantasy to start. I'm super excited about EPL. It's kind of funny because when you start to follow several teams or several sports, like, you're dividing your attention between, like, Newcastle and OSU and the Browns and fantasy. There, it's like... What is it, the law of marginal utility, right?
You get less excited about each one.
You get less excited about OSU because you also have Newcastle playing that morning, you know?
Right.
Or you only have so many hours in the day to read Tottenham blogs or Chelsea blogs or message boards or whatever.
Yeah.
You can only divide your attention so many...
I think the big loser for me has been OSU because, especially last year, their September, they were probably favored by over... 20 to 30 points against every opponent they had. So I'm going into those games saying, we're going to beat the shit out of these guys.
Yeah.
We're up 21-0 at the end of the first quarter. It's not fun. It's just not fun to watch. Whereas if I watch a soccer game, I know it's going to be probably a one-goal game. You know, it's going to come down. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. If we lose, that'll suck, but it's going to be a good game. And, like, you know, the Browns last year were kind of whatever, but, you know, there's all, like, the OSU thing is the really, like, was the one that I found less. I didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
And then it sucked because I didn't get into it until Big Ten started up and they, you know, they played. But even a lot of those games, seven or eight of those games, they're three touchdown favorites. It's just not fun.
Yeah.
You need a competitive, you need something to say, like, this is going to be a dramatic event that could go either way.
Mm-hmm.
That really gets me intrigued, which is why I've been, I think, more attracted to soccer, because a lot of that stuff is just, you know, it's one goal either way. Yeah, you have some blowouts, but it's not, it's more competitive, you know, it's, on a week-to-week basis, every game is fun to watch. It comes down to the last minute. And to me, OSU is the team that I think, like, I didn't really care when they lost to Clemson in whatever bowl game they played, or, you know, the Michigan game was fun, but that was, like, the only game of the year that I really was super pumped for. Mm-hmm. It was, like, it's just not fun. The NCAA has done a really good job of making their product complete shit, I think. And they're afraid of, like, playing the best teams against each other in September, because it's all about, we got to just keep our record pure for the end of the year, and it's just not fun. It's just, if they don't, there's no competition with it. It's, and OSU this year, I think, is going to be, their defense was bad last year. I don't see how they're going to get better. They have Braxton, and that's basically it, you know, and he'll be good enough to get them to 9 wins or 10 wins, but I don't think they're going to be anywhere near the national title. Maybe if all their defensive guys magically, their young guys get good or get better, but...
You don't think they could... You don't think...
I would not
be
surprised if they go
playoff?
8-4. I don't think... I would be surprised if they don't even win the Big Ten. I would not bet them to win the Big Ten. Michigan's... I mean, they're the favorites, but... I just... Like last year, they haven't won the Big Ten. I mean, they face a good team and a good defense, and they don't know what to do. They're just... Because they're so used to just running their read option, and they can run over all the bad teams just because they're better athletes and whatever, yeah. But it's... There's no... It's... I don't know. I don't trust them, and I don't think that they're going to have a great season. But maybe I'll be wrong. I don't know. I mean, they win 10 games every year just because they're Ohio State, whatever. But that's the team I've really kind of not watched as much. The Cavs, I don't really like the NBA regular season because it's just so
pointless.
Long and pointless, right? But the Cavs, with all the buzz around the Cavs, it's like they've got a free pass for this year because every game will be like Austin Carr like nutting himself, and like it'll just be so great for the first year. It just like, because they've sucked so bad, they're gonna be so stacked, and they're gonna just trounce people.
Yeah,
and LeBron's back, and the place is gonna go nuts, and like it'd be so fun to go to a game and go to the casino and like do outings.
Yeah,
like I'll watch all the Cavs games this year because it'll be so exciting. And but after that, like year three. If they win a title, and it's just like, okay, they're going to win 60 games, like, call me in April. You know, like, it doesn't matter till then. Like, I just have a hard time with stuff where if they're favored by 10 points and they're just going to blow out, you know, whoever, Atlanta, four times a year. It's just like, who cares? It's really hard to get up for that.
Yeah.
It's really weird because I remember caring a lot more about the NBA regular season back when there were actually, like, more kind of like talismanic figures playing, you know, like back in the Jordan days or whatever, like Jordan Bird, Thomas, Celtics,
Cloud the Glad,
like Carmelo. Parrish Mailman. And McHale, and even like the Phoenix Suns back then with Marley and like Charles Barkley and KJ,
I
mean, it seemed like it was a lot easier to care about the regular season back then, but I don't know if it was really, I don't know if there was really that much more parity. You know what I mean?
No, I don't think there ever has been in the NBA.
Yeah.
And that's where, like even the first
round
of the
playoffs...
So was
it just the personalities? Is it just that we don't have the kind of personalities in the NBA to really pull that off anymore?
Maybe.
With, like, the age of social media that we just see all the good and bad about everybody, and so we just don't like anybody that as much as we like those players? I mean, yeah. I don't know what it is. But it's like, I could give two craps about, you know, Blake Griffin or Chris Paul because I don't care about the Clippers.
Right.
So, it's not a thing. Like, if the Cavs, you know, if I'm watching some game out west, like, I don't really care if the Clippers are playing or if it's the Golden State Warriors or who.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I think it's just kind of odd that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, I guess, for me, Notre Dame and Tottenham are at like the top of my list.
Yeah,
I definitely care about those two teams way more than any other. Everything else is secondary to that. I mean, I care about fantasy football in a different way because it's like it's a game.
Yeah,
it's like playing a really long game of poker.
Yeah,
with a bunch of friends that you want to beat the shit out of.
Yeah.
So I don't think that doesn't really...
And it's a weekend, it's like a whole weekend event, too.
Yeah.
Like, you're, like, Sunday, you're, like, from 1 to 4 when all those games are going on, you're like, okay, what's my projected total? You know, like, there's just something to follow. And fantasy's a lot like that. It's it's like usually a 60-40 or 55-45 proposition. You know, like most of the time, if you look at the projections,
yeah,
it's not like it's 80-20. You know, like the week is generally not just decided. Even bad teams can beat good teams sometimes. So it's like there's some drama, there's some intrigue, there's some this could go one way or the other. You know, it's like if a guy gets tackled on the 1 yard line versus scoring a touchdown, that could be the difference between you winning the week and losing the week.
Yeah.
And that's fun. Like, it's not fun to have to follow teams that either get the shit beat out of them every time they play or beat the shit out of somebody else that, every time they play.
That aspect about fantasy football drives me nuts.
But that's what makes it fun.
Like, I don't
the drama of it.
It's
like,
fun when you're on the winning side of it.
Right, like, if I just would have got this, if I just would have, this two things would have happened, I would have won.
Yeah.
Not like, well, LeBron's going to come out and bust his nuts on the Knicks, and they're going to be up. You know, like, it's just stupid. It's like, whatever. When they decide they want to win, they'll win, you know. I want to know, it's like, it could go either way. Like, how's this movie going to end, you know? It's like, not like, well, Buckeyes 48, Navy 3, you know? Like, that stuff's just, I just don't have time to deal with those kind of sporting events.
See, the real problem with OSU football is that they're so consistently better than their competition that you need to root for a team that's very schizophrenic like Notre Dame, because
they could dump a shit team and then beat a really good team.
No game is ever out of reach for our opponent, you know? We could come out and look really hot in the first half and ring up 21 points, and then the second half just totally laid goose egg.
But even the NFL's like that. I mean, most Vegas spreads are going to be under a touchdown.
Yeah.
College, it may or may, you know, like that may never, you may get four games a year where the spread's under a touchdown for your, you know, for the top 10 teams in the country. You know, Florida State just is going to just beat the shit out of everybody every week. It's like, great, whatever. Yeah. So
that really isn't, Notre Dame has never had that kind of MO. We really do play down to the level of our competition.
Always.
And it always makes things very hair-raising.
For my entire life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the best Buckeye season there ever was 02, the year they won the national title.
Yeah.
And they literally won every game by less than a touchdown. They were like, it was like blue balls every single week. And it was like so great. It was like the best thing ever, because you're like, this is Purdue. They like, Purdue sucks.
Yeah, that was
They're
like
Notre Dame,
like, what, like, 2 or 3 years ago? Yeah. They squeaked out like 3 or 4 wins, but they got them.
You're like, I don't know how we're going to win this game, but we're going to win it because we figure out how to win games like this. And it was fun.
All right, well, we're approaching just over an hour here.
Have we gone off of Eric Marshall's three keys for
tangents?
Are we off the rails?
Successful podcast.
Eric probably stopped way back at the 5 minute mark.
Intro.
We started making
3 points. Outro.
Boom. Benediction.
40 minutes. Benediction. Praise God.
No, that's the doxology.
I know.
Okay. We need something to take us out.
Benediction is like,
I know. Is peace be with you.
Yes.
You're right.
And also with
and
you.
Also with you.
All right, guys. Well, I think that inaugurates our podcast season. So
we're hoping somebody else does one post draft or week one.
I think a post draft wrap up. I mean, maybe we'll try and get a few people around.
Lottery.
Yeah.
In between lottery.
Lottery
and
or after the draft.
After the
we'll
draft,
see.
Probably. Yeah, we have, so it's looking like August 22nd is the draft.
According to Doodle.
What happened with Eric?
I don't know.
Like, he's like, I said no, but I got to check. And we haven't heard anything.
I try not to give that guy too much shit, but he just needs to say, hey, babe, we're having this.
Oh, God.
The lottery party is the 22nd. Can we make it work? All right. Let's do it.
I don't know. I
think maybe that's unrealistic.
Basically, it's the 22nd, I think.
It's the 22nd.
Yeah.
Or the 30th.
Well, the draft is Labor Day weekend, right?
Yeah.
Why would we want to have the lottery party on the 31st? Because that's like a day before the draft.
Yeah, you could do it.
That makes no sense whatsoever.
You could do it.
You have 24 hours to formulate your draft strategy.
We already decided that mocks are stupid. We already decided that you just need to have your order.
But you still need to, I don't know.
I know what you're saying. That's why I figured Friday night would be better than Saturday night, too.
I say we just call it on the 22nd. Erin's the only person who's confirmed that she can't make it.
And she said she couldn't make any day.
Any day, yeah.
So we're good.
All right, well, regardless.
Eric, figure it out. We'll see you on the 22nd.
We love you, Eric. Someone do the next one. Organize amongst yourselves.
Someone do the next one.
Organize amongst yourselves. All right, we're out.